Okay, and with that, welcome and thank you for joining us. And we're going to go ahead and move on to our agenda for the day. Here is a look, oops, at the topics we'll be going over. Well, maybe we don't have an agenda. There we go. The agenda today. So these are the topics we'll be covering in the meeting. And please, just as a reminder, stay muted during the presentation so that everyone can hear our speakers as clearly as possible. And of course, there will be time at the end for any questions. So let's go ahead and get started with our health and safety update from Deputy Commissioner Mary Landrum. Mary?
Thank you, Kate. Good morning, everybody, and welcome again. So I can't believe that I actually have been in this role for 4 months, you know, and they say that time does fly when you're having fun. But I actually am happy to report to you today that we have hired the Director for Healthcare Business Management. Her name is Chichi Onodiobi, and she starts this coming Monday. So I'm very, well, we are all very excited to have Chichi join our team, and I look forward to introducing her to you at the next quarterly meeting. Now, if you go to the next slide, Kate, please. So I won't have the typical numbers necessarily for you that we present to regarding OMA, but instead what I wanted to let you know, just a couple of items. First is the fact that OMA, Office of the Medical Advisor, is at the tail end of the return to work plan-based audit. Upon completion of that audit, results or general outcomes will be shared with you at the next meeting. The other thing too is that staff in OMA is preparing for this year's performance-based oversight regarding the healthcare provider assessment. As a reminder, the OMA part is specific to the review of the DWC 73 forms in which injured employees have been taken off of work. And so I don't have really a whole lot of more information on that. We're just preparing for it. Typically, the work that's done by OMA doesn't start until the summer. Then on to healthcare provider outreach. So this calendar year, we kicked off healthcare provider outreach with a boot camp series comprised of 8 webinars conducted in just 5 weeks. This boot camp themed was designed to onboard new workers' compensation medical office staff. The series was quite successful with over 900 attendees, of which about 150 of them attended multiple boot camp sessions. If you have not attended any of our healthcare provider webinars, I strongly encourage you to do so. Staff continue to make these presentations more interactive. They po posting relevant web links during the presentation and then going to resources like our website, but also CMS, AMA, ODG, and MD guideline websites. In addition to that, they also like to do surveys, and the surveys are helpful for us because it gives us information from you as to what we ought to improve or what are other topics that you may be interested in. But for more information on upcoming webinars, please visit our healthcare provider webpage. And then moving on to return to work outreach. So Amy Rich, who is one of the main presenters for the healthcare provider webinar, she's also the person that presents to employers on return to work. And Amy has partnered with the Texas Workforce Commission to present at many of the Texas Workforce Commission conferences. Her presentation on workers' compensation for Texas employers focuses on Texas requirements for employers, safety, importance of returning injured employees back to work, employers' role and responsibilities, and resources available to the employers. So far this year, she has presented at 2 conferences, and she has about 7 left to present in person. However, Texas Workforce Commission oftentimes will show a recorded presentation at conferences where Amy is unable to present in person. And then moving on to the designated doctor program, just a couple of things. The first is the formal proposal in Chapter 127, Rule 180.23. The comments that were received on that proposal have been reviewed, and staff were working on the review of those comments and also on the adoption. So just be on the lookout for the adoption. And then one thing on the DWC 32 forms, just wanna let y'all know, even though for maybe healthcare providers, you are don't necessarily submit those requests because those requests typically come in from injured employees and carriers. The importance of those 32 forms coming in that are complete and with accurate information. Oftentimes when information is not accurate, it certainly puts the designated doctor in a disadvantage, or there's questions that are raised, or sometimes some of those exams can be delayed a bit. And then moving on to workplace safety, for those of you that may interact with workplace safety staff, just wanted to let you know that Sonny Salinas, who is our OSHCON Team South Manager, is retiring at the end of this month. His replacement is Amber Robertson, and we're happy to have her as the manager. And then just as a reminder that if you have any safety or accident prevention services related issues or questions, please do not hesitate to contact Chris DeMira, who is our director for workplace safety. And so now for medical fee dispute resolution, I'm gonna go ahead and turn it over to Greg Arndt, who is the director for MFDR. Greg?
Thanks, Mary. I just have a few numbers to go over. Shouldn't take very long. Next slide, please. So we're 6 months into fiscal year 2023. We've received a total of 1,534 disputes so far in the first 6 months of the fiscal year 2023. Our highest number of disputes is division specific. Those are designated doctor disputes, chronic pain management, work hardening, work conditioning, those type of disputes. That is the traditional largest number of disputes that we usually do receive. We are on pace to receive about 3,100 fee disputes in fiscal year 2023. That's going to be the most disputes that we've received since before the pandemic in 2019. So the number of disputes coming in are inching up slowly. Next slide. Wanted to go over the required documents for a DWC 60 form. 2 years ago, we updated the rule to allow for electronic submission of fee disputes. And it seems that some of the electronic submissions of disputes that we're getting in, they're incomplete. They don't have some of the required documents. Sometimes we're just getting in a DWC 60 form only. So I just wanted to go over the required documents that are needed for a complete fee dispute. We need a copy of all medical bills and reconsideration bills submitted to the insurance carrier. We are receiving some disputes come in without reconsideration. Healthcare providers need to bill the insurance carrier. The insurance carrier has 45 days to pay, reduce, or deny. And then you would need to do a reconsideration prior to coming into fee dispute. And if you don't do a reconsideration, the division does have the ability to dismiss a request if it hasn't gone through that reconsideration process. We're also going to need a copy of each explanation of benefits related to the dispute. I know sometimes insurance carriers do not send out, or you do not receive explanation of benefits. If that happens, just in the dispute, just let us know that we've requested an EOB, but we did not receive one. Then we also need a position statement of what are the disputed issues are and a copy of all medical records related to the disputed services. Next slide. Electronic submission. So MFDR has had long-standing fax numbers, email addresses that sometimes we're getting in medical fee disputes to those older addresses, actually. These two were the fax number and this email address was the dedicated numbers and email address to actually send in your fee disputes. So if you are submitting fee disputes by fax, please send it to 512-490-1044 and this encrypted email, the MedFee dispute submission email. If we do receive fee disputes on those older emails or other division emails, we do still accept those, but it does cause a few issues getting them timely docketed. We also take disputes through Secure File Transfer Protocol, SFTP. To set up an SFTP box, contact the division at this email address. And there's also the web page on how to actually do that. We recommend SFTPs if the fetus you're putting in have large amounts of medical records. So because it handles the larger documents much better than fax or email. Next slide. Filing disputes, please use the most recent DWC 60 form that was also updated in 2021. And if you are still submitting paper disputes, we still do get about 15% of the disputes we receive in on paper. Only one copy is required. Previously we needed two copies and one copy was sent to the insurance carrier. Now we go ahead and scan and digitize everything that comes in. So we only need one copy if you're putting it in on paper. Save yourself a little bit of postage and paper costs. If you're using a delivery service, FedEx, UPS, this is the address that you need to use, 1601 Congress Avenue. If it's U.S. Postal Service, it's going to be P.O. Box 12050. Next slide. And I think that's all I have. And I'm going to hand it over to Deborah Knight in Compliance and Investigations.
Hi, everybody. My name is Deborah Knight, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Compliance and Investigations. So next slide, please. So we'll start off looking at complaints. So our complaints are investigated by our audits and investigations team. That team, as of April, will be fully staffed for the first time in a long time with 23 folks, including their director, Diana Ramos. So they investigate the allegations of administrative violations, complaints, and we are really handling the complaints pretty efficiently now. We've had historically, a couple years ago, had a real backlog, but now we're moving pretty quickly. Let's go next slide. Let's talk about the number of complaints. So our numbers of complaints in calendar year 2023. So we're talking calendar here. So starting in January, we've received 338 complaints and we've closed 493 of those. So we closed more than we opened. Of the complaints that we received, about 67% of them come from external folks who submit those complaints, and 33% are internal complaints. The biggest category of complaints, of course, is communications, because that's a big bucket of what fits into communications. But what we're talking about is the failure to file timely reports by the designated doctor's exams, or to make contact with the designated doctor's appointment and reschedule with a mutual reschedule date. Those are the types of things we're looking at when we're looking at those complaints. So when we talk about other here, I always kind of informally people ask what the other is. So we receive things that really are not allegations of administrative violations, but so they're not really under our area. So, but we do send education letters out to folks referring them to what the primary office responsibility. So if it's something that should go to the medical board, we'll send out education letter saying, giving information about the medical board or the Social Security Administration, state bar. Not surprisingly, we get some things that actually really should be going to the Texas Workforce Commission and not us. So we get that contact information. Next slide. So of the complaints, I thought this was a way to look at it, to divide the look at the complaints and where are respondent types. So who's been complained about? The biggest system participant is the insurance carrier. And so they do have the most of the allegations of administrative violations. And next is healthcare providers. Next slide. So we'll talk a little bit about PBO. I think most of the folks on this call know that we are statutorily required to assess system participants, specifically carriers and healthcare providers, every other year on their performance in the system. This year, next slide, is for the healthcare providers turn. And Mary mentioned that earlier. So just a kind of overview of what we're looking at. We look at the 73s. The 73s that will be evaluated are those that occurred between June of 2022 and February of 23. Those will be assessed. And the 69s, the reported medical evaluations, and that occur between January 2023 through April 2023. And for those, for the 73s, we're looking at two different things. It measures the completeness, and the completeness of the form is evaluated, assessed by my group. And we look at specific areas, fields within the form that have to be filled out in order for the form to be complete. But as Mary mentioned earlier, the work status, the sufficiency of the documentation to support the off work status is reviewed by members of the MQRP panel and that are assigned, OMA assigns those folks, those doctors to look at those. Next slide. So what do you need to do to get prepared for it? If you are, check your text comp provider profile and update it. If you need help, here's the contact information, and read through the healthcare provider methodology paper. Obviously I have not covered it extensively at all enough here at this meeting, but if you look at the paper, I think it'll answer most of your questions. But if you do have any other questions, please go ahead and contact the PBO at tdi.texas.gov website and ask those questions. Next. So April, healthcare providers that have been selected will request their Form 73s from those healthcare providers. Then the summer of 2023, we should have preliminary reports about the results of the assessment for both both the review of the 73s and the 69s. And final results will be published in December. Because what happens in the summer, we give a chance for folks to, when they're looking at those 73s, if there's management responses to those forms, to that evaluation. And we are beginning the biannual planning. It's currently in the process for 2024, 2025. If you have any recommendations related to those, both the healthcare providers or insurance carriers, please send those suggestions to the email. Next slide. Okay, so the other part of my area besides the audits and investigations team is the fraud and prosecutions team. They are also fully staffed with 5 investigators, 3 analysts, and an intake specialist, as well as the director, Jamie Allen. Next slide. So looking at fiscal year 23, the fraud unit has received 785 fraud referrals, 50 fraud cases were opened, and 35 were closed, and we have referred 3 for prosecution. The referrals were 1 for claimant fraud, 2 of claimant fraud, and the scheme for those was creating a fake business in order to file false claims, and the other was a working and drawing claimant fraud case. Next slide. For the prosecutions, we've had 5 convictions for fiscal year 23. 2 of those were employer fraud. Both of those were schemes where the employer hid concealed payroll in order to get premiums, to have lower premiums. One of those was had a $300,000 in restitution, and the other was $180,000 in restitution for concealing that payroll. The other was a healthcare provider. And the fraud there was a pharmacist for billing for prescriptions that were not provided. And the other was, the last 2 was an injured employee working and drawing. And the last was an attorney fraud case. Next slide. Okay. The enforcement is another area within the compliance and investigations area. Over the past 2 years, we've had about a little bit more than an 80% turnover in our enforcement team. We've worked diligently to hire folks, hire and train, and currently enforcement is now fully staffed with 8 attorneys. That's counting their director, Nikki Carr, and 3 support staff. Next slide. We have 344 pending cases in the department. That is from a high where we were consistently having over 500 cases pending each month. Now we're down to 344. We've already closed 394 cases in fiscal year 2023. The department closes about 170 cases and brought its average days to close. For this quarter, we closed about 170 cases and brought our average days to close to 150 days. Next slide. So pending cases by subject type, either the healthcare provider, insurance carrier, or other. Other, of course, includes attorneys, employers, or injured employees. That's our lowest number of pending cases at 10. The highest is insurance carriers at 364 cases pending, and healthcare providers at 70. Next slide. Next slide. There we go. Cases closed by disposition type. Of the cases that we've closed, the vast majority of 88 were closed with an order for insurance carriers. For warning letters, the insurance carriers are 41 warning letters, and other were 6. We look at healthcare providers orders. Those cases were closed. 6 of those were closed with an order, 15 with warning letters, and 1 was another. Next slide. All our enforcement disciplinary orders are on our website. And so this is the link if you want to go look at what those orders are. I encourage you to do that. Next slide. So questions? Okay, if I don't have any questions, then I will turn it over to Kim Donovan.
Thank you, Deborah. Good morning, everyone. Next slide, please. I'm going to start with a legislative update. Next slide, please. So last quarterly meeting, we talked about some key dates of interest for the 88th regular session. We just passed a key date, which was March 10th, and that was the bill filing deadline. There are some exceptions like emergency items or local bills, which, as the name implies, means something that applies locally and not statewide. Session is in full swing, so we've had a lot of committee hearings. And then, believe it or not, our next big date would be May 29th, which will be the end of session. So it's just over 2 months from now will be the end of the regular session. Like I said, it's been a really active session. There was about 8,300 bills that have been filed. And there have been quite a few workers' compensation related bills and several key issues to keep your eye on this session. Next slide, please. So speaking of key things to look out for, legislative updates, I wanted to provide an update on DWC's legislative recommendations. The first is Senate Bill 1122, which this bill was just heard yesterday in the Senate Business and Commerce Committee hearing. And this bill excludes medical exams, services, or tests that help determine the appropriate level of workers' compensation benefits from sales and use tax. So we discussed this a little bit more in detail in the last stakeholder meeting, but a brief recap for those of y'all who couldn't make it, or a brief reminder, is that this was in response to a stakeholder that decided on their own to approach the comptroller's office to see if designated doctor exams were subject to sales tax. This ultimately led to the comptroller issuing a private letter ruling that said that these exams were considered insurance services and therefore are subject to sales and use tax. The comptroller's office is delaying implementing this guidance to allow for a legislative fix. And then House Bill 2535 is the companion that's in the House. And that bill has been referred to the House Ways and Means Committee, and we believe that it should have a hearing within the next couple of weeks. Our second legislative recommendation is House Bill 2534, and this is a limited public information exception for working papers, notes, drafts, and other electronic communications of our administrative law judges and appeal judges under the workers' compensation dispute system. This will help to ensure that DWC judges deliberative processes aren't subject to disclosure to parties in ongoing disputes. And this essentially just mirrors the limited exception that's provided to the SOA administrative law judges. This bill has been referred to the House Judiciary and Civil Jurisprudence Committee and will hopefully also be set for a hearing within the next couple of weeks. Next slide, please. So as expected, there have been a lot of bills that have been filed regarding first responders, many of which contain similar language or are trying to address the same thing. First responder bills are some of the ones that anticipate will have the biggest impact on the workers' compensation system this session. Some of those bills are for lifetime income benefits, like changing the outdated terms of imbecility and insanity, and adding a disability criteria based on the injured employee's ability to perform gainful work or to being permanently unemployable. There have also been expansions to the presumption laws that deal with clarifying injured employees' tobacco usage and timelines for heart attacks and strokes to consider being work-related, among other things. Next slide. We've also seen several potential changes to scope of practice, particularly for physical therapists to treat without a referral or now being defined as a treating doctor in the workers' compensation system. Some of these bills are proposing changes in delegation authority requirements for physician assistants and advanced practice registered nurses, and then a new physician graduate term, and that's found in House Bill 2556. There's also some changes to reports, medical reports and fees, for example, creating the option for injured employees or DWC to request a medical exam to help define the compensable injury, like in House Bill 790, or House Bill 1839, which creates a medical causation narrative report to show how the disputed medical condition is linked to the work-related injury. House Bill 2702 and its companion Senate Bill 1793 discuss changes in the amount of fees charged for no-show appointments for designated doctor exams. It would also increase reimbursement rates for designated doctors and requires an increase in their fee every 2 years according to Medicare Economic Index to adjust for inflation. Next slide. Another bill of interest is House Bill 351. This one allows a workers' comp insurer to contract with an accident and health insurer to offer a single package plan. The plan would cover major medical expenses for employees and dependents, and medical and other benefits under the labor code for employees. There have also been some legislation filed that would change or impact how the course and scope of employment is currently determined in workers' compensation, like House Bill 2539, which adds a new section in the labor code stating that injuries are not compensable if sustained at locations other of work site, which the employee is not specifically required to perform their job duties. House Bill 3107 and Senate Bill 1674 is specific to state employees and the authorization used to work remotely. And House Bill 3335 is specific to peace officers traveling to and from work to be considered under course and scope of employment. Next slide. And the last thing on the legislative update is there's also been some bills filed that would make changes to how contested case hearings are conducted by allowing for parties to attend remotely. Next slide. For the research and evaluation group update, next slide. This is a list of our upcoming reports. I'm not going to go through all of the reports, but I did want to share that the employer participation report and the March COVID-19 fact sheet, both are gonna be published by the end of the month. And then I also wanted to share that the data call for the May 2023 fact sheet will be sent out in April. We do not anticipate extending this data call. So the May 2023 COVID fact sheet is anticipated to be the last one. Next slide, please. So the last update for my area today is for communications. I wanted to share the 2023 Workers' Compensation Conference. Next slide, please. So please save the date. It's going to be held on July 10th through the 12th in Austin. The early bird registration is $400. After May 31st, it will be $450. We do currently have the titles of the presentations on our website, but when registration opens on April 3rd, there will also be linked to a full brochure, which will contain all of the details about the programs. The conference is Basics and Beyond, and we do have a lot of great speakers and topics, and there's something for everyone, so we hope you'll join us. With that, I will turn it over for any questions. Okay.
All right. Morning. Thank you, Kim. Appreciate all y'all being here this morning. I know it was a quicker meeting than usual. It's just a busy time of year for us here at the Capitol, and I know a lot of y'all with session going on. But I did kind of want to echo a few things that some folks said and maybe touch on a few other things. I did see there was a question in the chat about possibly trying to find ways to speed up our dispute resolution process in certain situations. That is something I'm looking at. It's a focus of ours right now. We don't have anything set in stone yet, but we are looking at a few ways to speed that up. And I'll just touch on them real briefly. One, we're looking at trying to create some form of pre-BRC discovery. And we're looking at possibly issuing our own interrogatories or maybe issuing presiding officer pods, providing officer directives to parties earlier to try to identify when there is an extent of injury issue so we can start working on that and working on medical evidence for that. So that's one thing we're looking at. We're also looking at creating a rocket docket. This would be an agreement of the parties, but if it's a very simple type of dispute, we would try to encourage parties to set those quickly so that issue can get settled more quickly. We're also looking at continuances. The requirement and rule to request continuance is it has to be done at least 5 days out.
What did I miss?
Post-COVID, we have seen many more continuance requests within that 5 days. We're trying to find ways to cut down on that because that really creates a logjam for us, and it just pushes the dispute back for everyone. We think it's important that these disputes get settled so injured employees know the benefits they're entitled to, doctors know what they're going to get paid, insurance carriers know what benefits they do or don't owe. So we think it's really important. The last thing we're looking at for that is, for those of you that don't know, the Office of Injured Employee Counsel, who assists injured workers through a lot of these disputes, recently got a new public counsel appointed. His name is Dirk Johnson. He's got a lot of experience in workers' comp. He used to work here at the division several years back. So we're excited that he's come on board, and I think he's going to be willing to work with us to see if those other steps we can take to continue improving the dispute process. So I know that didn't speak to the full question that was asked, and I know we're going to be reaching out to you probably after this call, but I think that that does speak to the system as a whole and some steps we are trying to take to speed that dispute process up. A few other things that were mentioned in here. Mary mentioned that she's been in her new role for 4 months. Mary's been doing an excellent job as deputy commissioner while also doing her old role, essentially. So I know she's really excited that Chi-Chi's coming on. I think she's going to be great. I've met her, I've spoke with her. I think when she gets on board, a lot of you all who interact with us a lot are really going to like her. I think she's very capable. So we're very excited that she's going to be starting up pretty soon. Mary also touched on the designated doctor rules. Those rules should be getting adopted here in the next few months. At least that's the first stage of those rules will, related to some of the administrative burdens, some of the training and testing requirements. We're really excited that those are going to be going live soon. We plan to do a pretty big push when those do go live, explaining the changes, making sure everyone's aware of what they do. We're also going to be contacting, designated doctors may have previously left the system to explain what the changes are, see if they have any interest in coming back. So probably in the next few months, you'll see a bigger push from us on just letting people know about those changes. And then, of course, the fee increase part, that's a separate rule project, but we are continuing moving forward with that. We're still doing work internally, but near the end of session, so the end of May, you're probably going to see some more information coming out from us on that. But I do want all of you all to know that we are continuing to move forward with that project, and we plan to get it done before the end of the year. The other thing I wanted to mention, Kim did a great job of laying out bills that are going on this session, but it is, you know, a busy time, and she touched on the big ones. There's a DD fee increase bill. There's remote MMI and IR exams. There's medical causation reports where that doctors can get paid for doing those. So, you know, I would encourage you, these slides are posted online. You can also see this recording that'll be posted after this as well. So if you have any interest in those bills, you can go back and look at those slides and look those up. A few other things, you know, Deborah mentioned that PBO is gearing up for healthcare providers with things really getting started this April. So be on the lookout for that. And then obviously our conference registration is going to start the beginning of April. Last year, we had, I believe, 600 people attend our conference. I think it's a very well-run conference. I think there's something there for everyone, everything from attorneys, healthcare providers, specialists, claims adjusters, you know, you name it. I think we cover the bases. So I'd encourage all of you all to look into that. It's in April. I believe it's July 10th through the 12th. Hope you all would consider joining us for that. And that's really all I wanted to touch on. So I'm happy to open up to any questions. Okay, quite a bunch. Well, we appreciate your time.
Thank you, everyone.